Welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
And welcome, everybody, to the Political Cesspool radio program. I am your host, James Edwards. Saturday night, October 15th. We're coming to you live tonight, as we have done every week for 7 years. From AM 1380 WLRM Studios in Memphis, Tennessee, going out to the AM-FM affiliate stations in select markets, courtesy of the Liberty News Radio Network, and of course, streaming online at our official internet headquarters, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Joining me in the studio tonight for his customary first hour is none other than my good friend and co-host, Keith Alexander. And I'll tell you, Keith has his commute time to the radio station down to a T. He got here tonight. Now, I've been here for about an hour setting up. Keith got here with literally 2 minutes and 45 seconds to spare before the show began. Keith, how did you get it down to the science that you've done?
Just hard work, James. I tell you, I've no, I tell you what, I didn't think I was going to make it on time. I was just rolling in here trying to run various and sundry errands that married men typically have on the weekends, and just made it under the wire, boy.
Well, you did, and let me paint a verbal picture for everyone as Keith comes in here on two wheels. As I said, I'd been in here for a little bit, got here early tonight, as I like to do. I like to take it easy, you know, get to the office early, get set up, you know, mentally prepare for the show. I've lit our customary candle for the week, and what we've got here, ladies and gentlemen, is a seasonal flavor this evening. It's a pumpkin spice candle that my wife bought me for the house, but little did she know that when I left to come downtown tonight, I heisted it from the bedroom. And so now, Keith, are you getting into the spirit of fall, this autumn harvest of scent we have burning tonight at WLRM?
Absolutely. I'm getting down home just like you. I'm taking my shoes off as we speak right now, and we've got the pumpkin out here, and we'll be chewing on a piece of hay next.
Well, that's exactly right. My wife's been out shopping for Halloween costumes for our daughter, and I'm just really trying to get into the spirit of the season. My favorite holiday growing up was always Halloween, and now as an older man at the ripe old age of 31, I guess it's turned to Christmas, but I still love Halloween. Still very special. A lot of great memories over the years at Halloween time, so I like to do everything I can to get into that festive mood. Now, I'll tell you one thing WLRM has, though. I wish they had a shower, because after the show, you know, it gets hot in the studio. After 3 hours of intense radio commentary, I'm ready to, you know, get a glass of wine and take it, you know, hit the locker room, get a shower. But they don't have that here. I'll have to take that up with management. What they do have is some great monitors here in the studio. And I was listening to a little Three Dog Night tonight, Keith. Have you ever heard about what a Three Dog Night is?
Yeah.
It's like in Alaska. If it's cold, you sleep with one dog. If it's pretty cold, you sleep with two dogs, but if it's absolutely freezing, that's a three-dog night. And they had some good songs, too.
I was going to ask you if you'd ever slept with three dogs before. Oh, man, I tell you what, I thought our favorite holiday was going to be Columbus Day. We'll talk about that, but I tell you, we need a shower here because James and I occasionally get chased by a mob with pitchforks and, you know, torches as we come into this studio and have to lock the door after us, and it'd be nice to be able to shower off after that.
That's right. We're always dodging bullets down here in downtown Memphis, Tennessee on Bill Street, and that's really not much of an exaggeration. We haven't been struck yet, but some party goers on the weekend down here. And, you know, that's what's so interesting. We leave the studio at 9 o'clock on Saturday night, but the drunkards haven't quite reached their zenith by 9, so we're still safe by a couple of hours when we leave the studio. But anyway, I guess we better settle down to business now. A little bit hyper this evening, you know, pacing the studio floor, waiting for Keith to come in. But we've got a big show for you tonight, as we always do. We're going to be talking about a lot of the topics that we've covered on the radio program's website over the course of the last 7 days in between shows. And Keith mentioned Columbus Day. And I mentioned some holidays, and that prompted that, which I knew was going to be a topic for discussion this hour. But we're going to save that for you. This was a huge article. I tell you, I really spent a lot of time working on this article, as Keith can attest. He knows, you know, when I put, you know, pen to paper and want to hammer out a magnum opus like that. It takes a little bit of time. But my article on Columbus Day really made the rounds on the internet and got picked up by a lot of different websites. We're going to be talking about that a little bit later this hour, the importance of Columbus Day, a holiday that you might not have noticed came and went on Monday if it wasn't for shows like this. Now, of course, many of our listeners will know the importance of Columbus Day, but we're going to remind you of why is it so important and some talking points you can take home to your friends. But Keith, tell them what else we'll be talking about this hour.
Well, we're going to be talking about this Occupy New York, Occupy, you know, fill in the blank, Occupy America movement that seems to be going on. The left has got their usual scumbags out in full force, and we want to, we've finally been able to, you know, ruminate on this enough to where we can have an official position on it, and James is going to give you that shortly. Also, we're going to talk to you about another typical situation in which a total bum is portrayed as a great hero to the people because of the typical racial dynamics that we always run into here in Memphis, Tennessee. We're going to fill you in on that particular vignette, and I'm sure we'll find some other things to talk about. You know, yeah, we're down here on Beale Street. Things just fly around just like the bullets do down here.
If we look out the window of our second story studio here at 1380 AM, we will find a story to talk about. I can guarantee you, no doubt passing by our window at this very moment, somebody is getting cuffed right now here in downtown Memphis. We will always have plenty of things to talk to you about. But as Keith said, a couple of great select topics we'll be talking about this hour. In the meantime, I'll tell you that I was listening to the Cow Seals earlier today. Their best song, Hair, was once my prayer before nature and testosterone took away what was left of my hair at the tender age of 25. But life's still been good to me. And also, Keith, you know, nothing gets past our listeners. I know we don't have very much time left in this segment, but we mentioned the name of Sam Cook last week. And sure enough, somebody was out there listening who sent me a video of him covering with his band a Sam Cooke song, the great soul classic. What's the name of it? Bring It On Home to Me. Bring It On Home to Me. And anyway, he wanted us to tell the story of Sam Cooke that we wanted to tell. Can we work that in 30 seconds or less?
I doubt it, but I'm going to give you the shot to do it, okay?
Well, you tell it so much better. Come on. Sam Cooke passed away before his time. The singer of Cupid, Bring It On Home to Me, Chain Gang, you know, only 16. He had a lot. He died in a hotel room in Los Angeles. Guy called him home early. What was he doing?
He was having sex with an underage white girl, and her mother apparently took umbrage at this and came in and blew him away, supposedly.
But it doesn't discount that the man could sing and sing well. Right, Keith?
But, you know, he came into pop after a big career in gospel music. Now, somehow that behavior doesn't seem to square with being a gospel singer, James. You tell me.
At least it didn't back in the 60s. But as I'll be talking about in tonight's second hour, the apostate church, and this is a recurring theme on this program, continues to shock and awe me. Presbyterian church not only allowing gay ministers now, but celebrating, requiring them. So much more coming. Stay tuned, everybody.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby.
Don't let me be.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. It's been non-stop chatter here in the studio since we went to commercial break. Had to cut it short now because work must intrude. But Keith, we mentioned a moment ago, we look out the second story window of our radio station here. We look down on Bill Street and we see all the passersby. Inevitably, at any point during the show tonight and any week, we can look out that window and there would be something worthy of talk radio commentary going on. A modern day Sodom and Gomorrah it is here downtown Memphis. But that's not what we're going to be talking about right now. But we do have another story that will interest people that does originate right here from our home in the River City. Keith, what is it?
Well, which one are you talking about, James?
We're talking about the beer factory.
Okay, the beer factory. This is just so typical, you know, and it is absurd. And most people have no idea about the story behind the story on something like this. There was an article in last Sunday's Commercial Appeal lauding the praises of one Carol Hardy, a black woman, who owned the old Slitz Brewery in Memphis, tried to start a business called Hardy Beverages, in which she was selling all sorts of health drinks and whatnot. Of course, it was a big flop. It was always needing new infusions from the Small Business Administration and from the city government and whatnot to keep its doors open. Then she happened to be the stakeholder at the time. The city was able to get a major brewery from out of the area to move into the Memphis market and buy this brewery that Carol Hardy had bought with $9 million of OPM. OPM stands for other people's money. Basically, the money that had been gathered together for by the local government in their, you know, zealous attempts to increase black entrepreneurship here in Memphis. And then she sells it for $30 million, makes a cool $21 million profit on this. And she hasn't staked up, I'm sure, $100,000 of her own scratch on this. But she made all this money, and they're up here lionizing her as if she had really gone to the mat, really made a great sacrifice, and all Memphians were going to benefit from this. You know, how do I sign up for that type of work, James?
I don't know, but if you figure it out, let me know as well. It probably pays better than this gig, although you would never have the moral satisfaction that comes from being a co-host on this show, no matter how much treasure you could accumulate. But what's the moral of this story, Keith? What's the point we're trying to get at?
Well, the point is that all of this ballyhooed black achievement that you hear about is a bunch of Bravo Sierra, you know, just to put it quite bluntly. Memphis is, I guess, ground zero, the home base for all of this. They keep trying to pump people up like this. They hold white people down through affirmative action and through, and then, you know, they come up, you know, with ideas like reparations for slavery. I was just reading that book by Alanna Mercer that, you know, you and Bill Rowland interviewed her about recently, called Into the Cannibal's Pot. In South Africa right now, white guys with PhDs and advanced degrees are unemployed. Meanwhile, a black person that has a high school diploma is a hot commodity and is allowed to have a supervisory position where all of these PhDs that happen to have the misfortune of being white in South Africa have entry-level jobs and work under them. This is where we're headed with all of this if white people don't snap out of it pretty soon, because the demographic projections are there, and folks, they ain't good. By the year 2042, whites are going to be a minority in America. We've already gone down from two-thirds recently to 64%. In 1960, we were 90% of the population of the United States. Then what happened? What happened was Brown versus Board of Education and its progeny basically turned many public schools in America into the black hole of Calcutta, and rather than throwing their children into that veritable black hole of Calcutta in Memphis and Detroit and other places like this, white people either moved to the suburbs, trying to, as Sam Dixon said, moving one exit down the expressway after another, trying to seek the good public, translation free school that they could afford to send their children to, but in the process overpaying for a house and usually having to sell two or three houses during the 12 years that their child would be in elementary, middle, and high school in America, and taking a loss every time they sold on the house they were selling and paying at a premium every new house they got. Or, if they stayed in the city, they limited the number of children they had to the number of children they could afford to send to private school. Very often that was two or less, and that's why the white population has shrunk. You've heard it here first. A lot of people don't want to talk about it. Of course, all of this coincided with legalized abortion, and Dr. Rock's birth control pill. And because of that, the white population has been shrinking. In the meantime, the minority population, I heard a black radio host, so-called conservative host, talking about this. He said, it's actually a moneymaker in the black community. If you're poor and you have more children, you get additional money from the government for each of those children. So they're being encouraged to reproduce. We're being discouraged from it. And this is what's happened. And, you know, that's why we are headed towards going over Niagara Falls in a barrel, basically, unless we stand up for ourselves, develop the sense of racial solidarity that people had, white people had in America, let's say in around 1950, and basically demanded that our own interests be served by the government and that we stop acquiescing to this dispossession that, you know, is typical. You know, while I'm on a roll here, tell you about something else. I went to a funeral today, a memorial service. And this was at a liberal church for a liberal couple. The husband and wife had died within several weeks of each other. And basically, they were being praised because they led a life of sacrifice and self-abnegation. They were a bunch of liberals. They were talking about how the wife had spoken up and said, we need to integrate this church that they were in. Of course, the church is barely hanging on now, probably has less than 100 members, not enough to, you know, grow or do anything, basically just a way to provide a sinecure for some liberal preacher. And, of course, the inevitable female associate preacher that they have with him at all of these mainline Protestant denominations. Same thing for the man. They never asserted themselves. And I was just contrasting this with a black funeral I'd gone to fairly recently about a guy that was a minor figure here in Memphis in the civil rights movement. Of course, everything he did was self-affirming and affirmed his racial group. While everything that, and that made him very praiseworthy. You know, he was a great hero because he did basically what comes naturally. He had a sense of racial solidarity and he worked for the betterment of his race. On the other hand, these white people, they were great people because they did just the opposite. They denied doing anything to try to advance their own race. In fact, they were very adroit and apparently skilled at basically stepping aside and letting other people have the opportunities, other racial groups. And this is the role that they've cast on whites. This has happened subtly, but this is what is approved of. That, you know, you got a complete difference in roles in America. Basically, a white person is a good person when they roll over and play dead, when they assist black people taking jobs, and these jobs, of course, are then not going to be available for their children and grandchildren. On the other hand, black people are great, not when they're altruistic, but when they are trying their best to advance their own kind, Jay.
Keith, I think I ask you on behalf of our entire audience, can you stay for extended play this week? A full 3 hours, that's what we need after a commentary like that. But we got to take a commercial break, folks. Stay tuned. More Keith Alexander this hour coming your way with me, James Edwards, right after this on the Political Cesspool.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta get out of this
place. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. If you want to know what the joke is, no, you don't want to know what the joke is. Keith was coming up with a one-liner right before we came back from break, and that's going to remain between us, I suppose. But welcome back, nevertheless, to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. James Edwards, Keith Alexander, we're having a good time tonight leading you through the murky waters of the cesspool. We've always got to talk about all of this heinous stuff, but we have a good time doing it. We keep our energy level high. We keep a sunny disposition. We're happy to be toiling for the cause, toiling in the vineyard, as the good Lord instructed us to do. We know that the hour is late and the righteous are few, But nevertheless, we're here and we're in good spirits. And it's great to be here with you, ladies and gentlemen, and you, wherever you may be. Of course, just because we're based in Memphis, have a couple affiliates here in town and some stations, you know, of course, that carry us across the country here in America. We can never discount our massive internet audience. Just in that last commercial break, I received an email from a listener in South Africa. Earlier, Keith, as you know, we received an email from a listener in Australia and from all ports of call. Folks, if I told you how many emails I received each week as a result of my work on the radio, as a result of this show, you wouldn't believe me. I'll talk a little bit more about that in the second hour when I have more time. Of course, Keith is only with us for the first hour of each week, so we've got to make sure we maximize his exposure, and then I'll hold court with you the rest of the way. But, you know, talking about some of the emails we've gotten some of the emails we're getting right now, I actually got a text message during that last commercial break from none other than my own mother, who was driving around town tonight listening to the show. So always good to know that Mom is tuned in, right, Keith?
Yeah, like B.B. King said, ain't nobody loves you but your mama, and she might be jiving you too. But I think that your mother really does love you, James, and she has to, you know, because you've got a face only a mother can love, right? No, that's not right. But let's get back to what we were talking about. We were talking about the demographic change in America and how Alanna Mercer's recent book, Into the Cannibals Pot, basically is predicting for America what has happened to South Africa, which is totally irremediable. It cannot be remedied. It cannot be retrieved. Once it's gone for good. And basically what happens is the left gets the camel's nose in the tent, and they appeal to white altruism. Of course, that couple whose memorial service I attended today is a perfect example of that type of altruism. They've bought it hook, line, and sinker. And of course, you know, when the family fortunes fade and set into the sunset, they're always surprised. Why? Why should you be surprised about that? That's what basically the left has in mind for you. This is what Alanna Mercer, in her book Into the Cannibals Pot, talking about South Africa, documents in gory detail. That's what's happened to white people. White people who are smart, who are educated, are basically living in poverty without modern conveniences like running water and utilities in South Africa, because their leaders basically got guilt-tripped into turning the reins of government over to blacks. Now, you know, believe me, when whites become a minority in America, it will be just as it is in South Africa. Minority rights will be a thing of the past. Believe me, your new black overlords or Hispanic overlords or non-white overlords of any type aren't going to be terribly worried about whether or not you're happy and satisfied, and they're not going to be initiating affirmative action programs for us. You know, if you believe that, see us after the show. There's a bridge in Brooklyn we'd like to sell you. Now, we were telling a joke here before we got started that I heard today, and this is, when is it all right for a man to ask, where is this relationship going? And the answer was, when he's been kidnapped by pirates and the name of their ship is a relationship, right?
You know, and that's what separates us. Just got an email from a friend of ours, Keith, that we've met before. A young lady in Alabama who says that she loves listening to the show because we talk about our personal lives. We talk about our families. We incorporate that into the news and our coverage of the big stories. And, you know, we continue to laugh in the face of all of this adversity and jokes like that. And just our common demeanor is an inspiration to people. And I want to thank her for taking the time to write, as so many other people are doing right now. In the midst of what is a suicide for our people in many ways, you know, you're watching the mass suicide of a superpower, which just so happens to be the title of Pat Buchanan's newest book, and is not for sale yet. It actually comes out for sale on Tuesday, October 18th, you can get Pat's latest and most hard-hitting book ever. Let me tell you something about this book, ladies and gentlemen. Pat Buchanan has never been more frank or more candid about racial issues in his life than he is in between the pages of this new book. Now, tell them how I know that, Keith, since the book is not yet for sale.
Because James has a coveted pre-release copy of the book. Now, let me tell you, I looked at this thing. It's thicker than any other Pat Buchanan book I've seen. Yeah, it's thicker than the Bible. And let me tell you, as soon as I looked at that title, I said, dang, I wish I had come up with that name, because that's exactly what we're talking about. We're talking about the suicide of America and of the West. And if you want to know where it's all going, we've got the roadmap. It's Zimbabwe and South Africa. And if you want to end up like that, impoverished, wondering every night whether a gang of machete-wielding thugs is going to come in and lay waste to you and your family, cut their heads off, butcher you, you know, just continue down this merry path of multiculturalism and it's all good and everybody is equal and whatnot. Look, the left, and particularly these Occupy America people that we're going to talk about a little bit later, they love Thomas Jefferson because he was the author of the phrase in the Declaration of Independence, all men were created equal. But he explained later in correspondence to his friend who was an adversary during the heyday of their political careers, John Adams, that he meant only that they're equal before the sovereign in terms of their rights. He said in terms of talents, intelligence, and morals, a more correct statement would be that no two men were ever created equal. So consequently, we need to understand that all of this leftist move for equality of results is totally contrary to the wisdom of our founding fathers, totally against the founding principles of America. It's time to recapture those principles. Suicide of a superpower. What a perfect example of what we're doing. And you know that little joke I was telling you about the the pirate ship called The Relationship just a moment ago? There's a dark side to that. That's why what that speaks to is the reluctance of men to get married, and if they're not getting married, they're not having children, or if they are having children, the children are being raised in single-family households, which is not good for the future of anybody, and particularly the people that are involved. Now, you know, it hadn't been good for the black people of America. It's not going to be good for the white people of America or the Hispanic people of America. Why are men reluctant to, commit to a relationship, which is apparently what they're calling marriage now? They are reluctant to do it because liberalism, through feminism and changes in the law, have made being a husband a very perilous proposition. You know, you're basically existing at the goodwill of your wife. And if she turns out to be one of these typical feminist nut jobs, you know, you're going to find out that Mr. Lincoln didn't free all the slaves. I've seen plenty of guys going through divorce court that basically are indentured servants or slaves in America today because they trusted their future to a woman who turned out, you know, to fall prey to all of this feminist claptrap in America, James.
I don't know if Pat Buchanan covers that in his new book, Keith, as right as you are, but I will tell you this, and I reiterate my point. He minces no words. He spares no feeling in this new book. He hits you right between the eyes, ladies and gentlemen. And to say again, this book goes on sale to the general public on Tuesday, October 18th. You can go ahead and pre-order it tonight. Pre-order it tonight at Buchanan.org. Buchanan.org, you need it, and it will ship to you on Tuesday. You can go ahead and place your advance order. It will ship to you on Tuesday. Will Pat Buchanan be on this show to promote his new book? Will he? Well, you're just going to have to stay tuned, aren't you? You're going to have to stay tuned and find out with everybody else what happens later this month on the Political Cesspool. Got to take a break, Keith. I know you want the microphone back really bad, and I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give it to you for the whole next segment. We got to talk about Occupy Wall Street. And I'll talk about Columbus Day in the next hour because you know how hard I worked on that big old lard. You know, and so we're going to talk about that in the next hour. Folks, you're going to want to stay tuned for every minute tonight. I tell you, it's a barn burner tonight. We're blazing tonight. Well, stay tuned. Occupy Wall Street next on the Political Cesspool.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. You know, I want to get back real quick. I was talking to Keith about this, or Keith and I were talking about this together during the last commercial break. I want to get back very quickly to Courtney's email. It was a short two-sentence, you know, thing that she sent in from Alabama in the last segment, but it actually meant a lot because even though we're not striving to come across this way, we're just being ourselves. It's great to know that people are picking up and appreciating that which we're out to display. And she said that, you know, she loves listening to the show because, you know, we can carry on this lighthearted banner and talk amongst each other as friends, along with covering the big news stories and issues that we do on this show. And she writes very accurately that this is the sort of thing that makes our show a Southern show, as opposed to a show just for our cause. She says that she looks forward to it every weekend, that it brightens up her Saturday evening, and that, Keith, she even listens to the show when there's an important football game on. How about that?
Now, that is the acid test for a Southerner, I guess, and a Southern woman, that she'll tune out Alabama football. Of course, they're probably romping all over Ole Miss right now as we speak. They were up 14-7 the last I heard. It's probably going to wind up like Tennessee and LSU. Tennessee wound up losing 38-7 to LSU.
It was 0-0 with 8 minutes left in the first, and they figured that was
good. And they folded like a cardboard outhouse in the rain, as they typically do, James. But let's get back to Pat Buchanan. Let me tell you, you don't want to be in the situation I was in when Sam Francis suddenly died back in February of 2005. I said, oh, man, I just wish I had taken the opportunity to go to some of these conferences and talk with him before. He was an absolutely brilliant mind. He was a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. He had lost his job because he was outspoken about paleoconservatism. But he soldiered on. He wrote that statement of principles, that excellent statement of principles, when he was editor of the Citizen Informer for the Council of Conservative Citizens, which is another one of our favorite groups. And we'd like to send a shout-out to Kyle Rogers tonight, who is the current editor of the Citizen Informer. But don't be in this situation. Yeah, right. Not only Sam Francis, but Bill Rowland was before then, who's with our show, of course. But Pat Buchanan is probably the brightest and the most prolific writer in paleoconservatism. And you know that when he hits the nail on the head, he drives it straight, and he doesn't shilly-shally around. He will, as my grandfather used to say, call a spade a dirty shovel. And that's exactly what he does in every one of his books. He has a penetrating intellect. He knows exactly where the bodies are buried by the left. He knows what's going on. He knows, for example, that the civil rights movement isn't pro-black. He knows that the feminist movement isn't pro-woman. He knows that the gay rights movement isn't pro-gay. They're all anti-white male. What Paul Craig Roberts called WHAMs, white heterosexual able-bodied males. That's the enemy in the eyes of the left. This is a cultural Marxist paradigm. It was also Trotsky's idea. He came up with it at about the same time. Get this book and stay tuned for updates about Pat Buchanan, because, you know, who knows? He might wander in here at just about any time. Right, James?
You know, I'm not going to tell you what I know. I'm just going to tell you, you have to stay tuned. You got to stay tuned every week, maybe even, you know, through Christmas. I'm telling you, you don't want to miss a show. You never know what you're going to miss if you miss a show. Right, Keith?
Yeah. He's mercurial. He'll come like the ghost of Christmas yet to come. You know, he comes at his own pace and his own time. But when he comes, believe me, you don't want to miss it. So stay tuned, folks. Now let's talk about Occupy America.
Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Atlanta, Occupy Portland, Occupy whatever. You know, I finally put a blog posting up about this earlier this week. And the reason I hadn't covered it before, despite the incredible amount of news coverage it's receiving, is because I hadn't really taken the time to read both sides and form my own opinion as to what's going on up there in Wall Street. And I know undoubtedly there are some good people, probably some Ron Paul supporters up there who are up there for the right reasons and have a good head on their shoulders. But the more I look at this thing, the more I read about it, and of course, as my post at thepoliticalcesspool.org kind of concluded, I see a lot of parallels here with the so-called civil rights movement in terms of the caliber of people that are up here, despite them being mostly black, being led by Jewish ringleaders, which was the civil rights movement. These are mostly white people, but they are apparently the bottom of the barrel. You go up there and, well, Keith, tell them what our post is all about. We're going to be talking more about this later on in the show, too. But while, again, while Keith is here, I want to give him the majority of the floor because he leaves after the first hour, and then I have the rest of the show with you. But we're going to continue to talk about Occupy Wall Street, Columbus Day, and much more as the show continues. But Keith, tell him, you know, the parallels between the CRM and Occupy Wall Street.
Well, basically, you've got the same type of white liberals who Vladimir Lenin famously dubbed useful idiots back in the 1920s, early 1920s. These are people that have an instinctive altruism, an instinctive attraction towards left-wing causes, but they don't realize that if their fondest wish comes true and the left succeeds, they're going to be some of the first sent out to the gulags. They are not going to be allowed to have any position of authority or power. They have nothing to gain from it, and basically they're just being gamed by the people that are in charge. Now, there are several good things about them. One is they are willing to name and shame Jewish power and influence. That's who Wall Street is nowadays. That's why Wall Street supported Obama, because Wall Street is no longer Merrill Lynch and Brown Brothers. It's Goldman Sachs, a Jewish concern, and they control Wall Street now, just like they control just about every other major institution in the United States in today's world. And because they do that, because they are in charge, we have a different Wall Street. We have a predatory Wall Street. We have a Wall Street that doesn't care two hoots about the future of the American people. Now, we agree with their idea that there is not economic justice in America, but we think there's no economic justice for white people because of liberalism, because of things like affirmative action, because of things like reparations for slavery, because of the type of racial preferences that you encounter daily in a place like Memphis, Tennessee. You have 65% of the population in Memphis that are black, so consequently, the EEOC thinks that 65% of all the good jobs should go to black people, regardless of their qualifications. So consequently, we're getting a little foretaste of what the people in places like South Africa and Zimbabwe are actually living with and, you know, having their lives ruined by. We have it to a lesser degree, but unfortunately, there's a lot of America out there. If you look at a racial distribution map of America, where if they want to see a black person, they've got to turn on the television set and watch one of these football games or basketball games. We just need to look out the window, and we'll see, you know, about midnight, you know, they don't call it the witching hour for nothing. Things really get hot down here at on Beale Street by midnight.
Hey, Keith, you know, tell them what's been going on here on Beale Street. Literally, I mean, folks, if you come to our radio station, you look out one side of the building and you see FedEx Forum, which is the home of the Memphis Grizzlies NBA basketball team. Of course, they're locked out right now. I'm going to talk about that more in the second hour, too. And you look on the other side and you've got Beale Street, which is sort of like Bourbon Street. Beale Street is Memphis's answer to Bourbon Street. And it is the entertainment district. It's where all the clubs and music venues are. And Keith, Beale Street has been making a lot of news this month. Why?
Well, it's been making news because, see, Beale Street, just like Bourbon Street is supposedly based on the theme of jazz, Beale Street is based on the theme of blues, which is black music of another era. And as a result, there's been a great effort to incorporate black people not only in the management of Beale Street, not only in the performers at the clubs, but also a black audience. They have black themed clubs, and black people are like birds of a feather that like to flock together. They, you know, for example, all these churches, like mainline churches that run billboards and ads saying, "Is your church less integrated than the boardrooms of corporate America?" And, of course, you're supposed to feel great shame if the answer is yes. And all of these churches, even the fundamentalist churches, have just gone out of their way. They're just falling all over themselves to get black members. But despite their best efforts, they can't do it. Same thing for these clubs on Beale Street. They don't want to come to black white churches. They don't want to come to white clubs because they like their own kind and they like to have them. And they've insisted on having clubs for themselves. And they have them on Beale Street. And those clubs, as Gomer Pyle said, surprise, 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 always tend to be the hot spots for violence, shootings, and basic illegal behavior on Beale Street. And there's one in particular that's down at the foot of 4th Street and Beale Street, which has gone through various names, but the clientele remains the same. It's a kind of, rap music, dance hall, watering hole, whatever, and it's got all sorts of black, it attracts black people, and it's always the center of all the problems on Beale Street.
Where did the time go? I had no idea this hour was up, but Keith barely got that in, and we got to take a break. We'll be back with the second hour right after this. Stay tuned, everybody. The best is going to keep getting better.
It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. We're jumping pews and shouting hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his Fruit of the Looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the Amen.